fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Checking the lineup for the radio program today. We have changes. We have corrections.
Oh, okay. I don't think they're on my version here, so you'll have to tell me about it.
Gary Bettman might have joined us today, but apparently will not.
You thought better of it?
I don't know. I know he likes me. Maybe he doesn't like you anymore.
I just wrote a column about him for the magazine. It's in this week.
Maybe he's seen it.
Yeah. Well, it was as nice as I've ever been to him in print.
Why?
Well, because I said he's no longer the worst commissioner in professional sport.
Well, that's sort of a backhanded compliment.
Well, it is sort of, but it's true, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't think he would look upon that as...
No, like, but I was generous, but I also... It wasn't just about Roger Goodell now being the worst commissioner in professional sport. It was about, you know, the deck has shuffled a little bit, and now David Stern's gone, so the other guy's early days for the other guy, and, you know, and Bud's on his way out, and no one's ever... You know, Bud doesn't get treated... with great reverence by most people. But, you know, he's actually done a decent job in some ways. He's done a terrible job in others. But, you know, right now things, the NHL business is, is as stable and healthy as at any time during Gary Bettman's tenure. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I don't know. I'm not inclined to agree with that just based on...
Well, they got labor peace for a long time. They've got a big TV deal.
Well, they got labor peace now.
Yeah, but you know...
Because they got a long-term deal with the players.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. So, you know, that I'm saying right now, you know, there's nothing... He's not locking anybody out. They're not shutting down for a year. And there's no real looming crisis there. They've got to, you know, they're going to have to move Florida. They're going to have to move Phoenix one of these days. But every league's got a couple of weak sisters, except the NFL. It's all relative.
Still, it's a backhanded compliment.
Well, that's as nice as I've ever been.
Well, congratulations to you.
So, if he'd read it, he probably would be here.
Anyway, I don't know that he's not here because of you. I don't think he's not here because of me.
He's got bigger things to do.
Well, I don't know what else
he was down at CBC with the Poobahs.
Well, he was, yes, and he was, the Canadian Club. The Canadian Club
today? He did, yes. He made a speech today.
Anyway, he won't be here.
Okay.
Which is what I said like 3 minutes ago, and you just went off on this tangent about your column.
Well,
it's all about you.
I see. I heard the clip from him today saying that the league was proactive about domestic violence. Was it one of your callers, or was it who mentioned Semyon Varlamov? One of the callers, right?
Yeah.
That would have been a good question for him.
Would have been.
Yeah. You know how long Semyon Varlamov was, you know, off?
I don't remember.
2 days.
That's what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the world has changed. I think the sports world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to be able to get away with a lot of this stuff. A lot of people are going to be asking questions in a lot of arenas now. And they're going to go through what we went through with the National Hockey League for years and years and years and years. When every time they announced a suspension, we would rag on them because it was too light. And...
except those were all hockey things, though.
I know. This is different. It's societal stuff. But I think in everything, I think you're going to see the media and in general questioning now these policies of slap on the wrist rather than real punishment.
Any event. No, you're right. It's going to be a hot button for a long time.
Long time. Greg Zahn will join us instead of Gary Bettman.
Papa Greg Zahn.
Yes, his first appearance as a daddy.
Yes, he's transformed, I'm sure.
Darren Heitner of Forbes magazine will join us. U.S. Congress looking into possibly taking away the NFL's not-for-profit business statute.
Yeah, let me know when that happens.
Yeah,
I'm sure someone will make a speech about it, and there will be a committee, and someone will get quoted saying they're going to do that, and then nothing will happen.
Nothing will happen.
It's a great photo op for politicians, generally.
Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe will join us. We always enjoy that. And yes. Will Carroll of the Bleacher Report. He's the injury expert.
Oh, yeah. Our injury guy. Yeah. What are we talking about today?
NFL. A lot of injuries.
Yeah. There's some nasty ones, too. Boy, there's some
stars going down. D'Angelo Hall, Jamal Charles, Robert Griffin. Probably others, too.
Ike Taylor last night broke his arm in a particularly gruesome way, I guess. They wouldn't even show the replay, which when they don't show the replay.
They showed Joe Theismann, for God's sakes, over and over again.
But it was interesting last night.
Could
they
be
made
worse
a call,
than that.
And they said, we're not going to show you that.
Good.
Which I think, but it's been.
I didn't watch last night.
But there's been some pretty gruesome stuff already this season.
Had the afternoon games on. Watched bits and pieces. Watched the Denver-Seattle
finale.
That
was the best. That was fun.
The end was great, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But didn't watch the game last night. So there's our program.
Now you got to thank somebody here, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I thank you.
I'm you're welcome.
He didn't send it to me. He sent it to you.
Well, no, he's read the letter.
I read the letter.
Okay. He said there's a PS. You're the PS at the bottom.
Eric Rankin. Where's Eric from?
He's from Saskatchewan.
Okay. So I guess Eric was going through a bunch of old magazines that he'd kept, and I don't know why he kept this one, but this is a motion picture magazine, which I've never heard of. It's got an ad for L&M cigarettes on the back.
I don't think you can even hold that up now. It's illegal to hold that up on TV.
Watch this. There it is. What other ads they have in here? New Clearasil medication starves pimples. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that's how they beat them with starvation.
Starves pimples. One of those ads that doesn't even look like an ad. There's one for false teeth.
You've got to explain why you have this magazine.
Look at this. Be a nurse. Make $50 to $60 a week. When is this magazine from? I didn't even look. Did you look?
It's 1950s, isn't it?
Well, it's got to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
$50 to $60 a week as a nurse. April 1956.
There you go. Before my time.
And there's an article in here on Rory Calhoun.
Your long-lost relative.
Yeah. My cousin.
Yeah, and you know, there is a resemblance there, Bob, if you look at him.
You think he looks a little like me?
Well, that's, you know.
I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe. Anyway, I didn't read the article yet, but thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I was sent a copy of The Fighting Fisherman, the Yvonne Durrell book, so thanks for that, too. It's actually one that I don't have in my boxing library, but the Yvonne Durrell story is a great story. And
so this is a story by Lita Baron Calhoun.
The missus.
One of them.
Was he married multiple times? Do you know this book?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Cousin Rory?
Cousin Rory was quite promiscuous, apparently.
Well, maybe she wrote a follow-up story after. By the way, all that stuff I wrote before?
After he dumped her?
Forget about that. Actually, here's what he was really like.
Yeah, I didn't find out till a few years ago that he was my cousin. He was a McCowan. Changed his name to Calhoun. Frank McCowan was his real name. And then
went to Rory Calhoun?
Yeah. And then my aunt found out we were related, and then when she was in California, she went to his house in Beverly Hills or wherever the hell he lived and knocked on the door. And he came to the door and said, "What do you want?" And she said, "I'm your cousin and from Columbus, Ohio." And at that point, he slammed the door in her face. And that was the end of the conversation.
Don't you think it's interesting they changed the guy's name from Frank McCowan to Rory Calhoun? Wouldn't they do it the other way around normally? Like, you know, don't they usually take
Rory Calhoun? But see, he was in a lot of westerns.
He was. Yeah.
So Rory Calhoun was a very western sounding name.
Yeah, I guess.
John Wayne's name wasn't really John Wayne.
Michael Morrison.
Yeah. John Wayne sounds like a Western name.
Yeah.
Rory Calhoun is like, that's as Western as they come.
Could have got away with Frank McCowan, I think.
I don't think so.
Anyway. It's worked for you.
My name's not Frank McCowan.
You don't have one of those radio names. Did anyone try and give you a radio name?
Nope.
Because, you know, a lot of guys got them, right?
Yep.
Like Jim Van Horn got one. Jay Nelson got one.
Well, yeah, but they were all DJs.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think Van Horn I think Jim got his when he was a sportscaster, didn't he?
I don't know.
I think so.
I thought he DJ'd early in his career. Maybe not. Don't know that I've ever asked him about it.
But no one ever said, so during your nascent radio career, Foster didn't come up to say you got to change your name to
his name was
Biff
Foster.
Barker or something, you know, some kind of sports name.
Well, if he tried, I'd have said, you didn't change your name. Your name's Foster, for God's sakes. That was hardly a radio name. No, they didn't, as a matter of fact. But it was very common among DJs. There used to be a DJ that was on 680 called Gardner Westbound.
Mm-hmm.
Remember him?
Yes.
I wonder what his real name was.
It's great, though. That was...
Gardner Westbound. That was when the Gardner Expressway was first opened, too. That's a pretty funny name.
I think that's great.
Our program director's real name isn't our program director's name.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Really?
Yep.
What's his real name?
What's his real name? Do we know? I forget. I used to know. Yeah, let's throw it out there. Sure. Brent Kalinich.
Really?
Yep. Is now Don Collins.
Sure, he's not like in a witness protection program or something.
Oh, right? He could be.
So you've blown it now.
He's a little
weird.
The
guys who are looking for him are going to find him now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't want to do that.
So that's why he's Collins with a K.
Yeah.
Because he's the only one I've ever seen.
Yeah. See? Another guy. But he was on radio. You know, he's a program director now. He was a failed radio guy, which is what all program directors are.
Not all of them, are they?
All of them.
Everyone?
Everyone. Name a program director who was a successful radio or broadcast
personality. What was Nelson's broadcast career like?
Oh, an hour.
I can't believe that.
No, he worked in some like Padoink, BC or someplace, some peanut whistle town. And he was no good at it. So he became a program director.
I thought he would have been good. He would like the payola, too.
Well, if he was any good at it, he wouldn't have wound up as program director.
You mean you don't rise through the ranks?
No. It's not how it works.
Okay.
You say, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm no good at this. I'm going to find something else to do. And I don't have any real talent, so I'll become a program director. Because program directors have no skills. They have there's no specific talent. Like, what is the quality that you want in a program director?
Well, let's see.
What is the basic skill set that you need? Like, we understand... Broadcasters have to be able to talk. You have to be able to talk. You have to be able to formulate thoughts on the fly.
Yes.
If you're just a DJ, you got to have probably a good voice.
Correct.
Right? And
hit the post.
Hit the posts and slam those call letters. Have a couple of catchphrases, you know, teeny beans, blue jeans, blast from the past, gold nugget, solid gold to make you feel old. You know, all those things.
Yes.
Program director. What's the number one asset that a program director has to have in order to become a program director?
I have limited experience with this, but I would say probably managing difficult personalities.
Yeah, how's that working out? That's so good, huh? Well, I rest my case, Your Honor. Guilty. Anyway, thank you to Eric.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Much appreciated.
Now, Zahn's going to join us. You know what's interesting? I had somebody just slag me on Twitter, which is fine. It happens every day. I could care less. But it reminded me of all the slagging that I've taken the last couple of years for not bowing at the feet of the Blue Jays' former center fielder, now relegated to bench status and occasional pinch-hitting duty.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy who was so bad this year, he lost the trust of his manager.
Yes.
Who relegated him to the bench when he didn't even have a replacement, really. And at a time when arguably some people, like you, were suggesting they were playing games that were meaningful.
First
week of September.
Yes, I would suggest that.
Well, when the games were meaningful and absent anybody he knew could do a better job, he still sat this guy.
I'd argue with the second part of that. I think he thought somebody could do a better job because
Rodgers
had such a terrible year. Well, the combination of, you know.
Ghost and Pilar?
Yeah, which is kind of how it's played out since September 1st.
Well, what are they hitting? They're both hitting about 200.
But they do.
Which is about what the center fielder was hitting before.
Yeah, he had an awful. Rasmus had a horrible year and he kind of. You know, again, I'm not the first person to say it because a bunch of people have said it who are spend a lot of time around that team, but he kind of surrendered, right? He just said, there's the sense that he doesn't want to be not here in Toronto or here in a Blue Jay uniform, but just kind of here in baseball right now. He's like a guy that's kind of lost his desire to play the game. You know, and again, that kind of harkens back to, you know, JP Ricciardi and Adam Dunn, who, you know, still playing the game and still hitting home runs. So, you know, maybe he actually does like playing baseball. But this guy...
Yeah, Ricciardi slagged him and said he wasn't...
He didn't like baseball because he didn't like baseball. Well, this guy, I don't... You know, again, it's amateur shrink time, but Colby Rasmus has as much ability as You know, he's a, he has terrific athletic ability, and he's coming off a very good year last year. And no, but
end of the year,
he's had an awful year, and you kind of wonder what's going to happen to him. You know, he's a free agent. Maybe someone will roll the dice and say, we think we can get something out of him. The Blue Jays traded for him.
Yeah, what price, though?
Well, not a whole big price. They didn't give up a ton. You know,
which
that wasn't
Zani in here.
That wasn't a terrible deal.
Here's the new papa, the proud new papa. Here's Greg Zahn.
Congrats.
Congratulations to you. Are you listening at all? Zahn, you there?
Uh-oh. Can you hear
him? No.
Zahn apparently can't hear us.
Can't hear us.
Fix the technical issues. Should we try now? Can you hear us now?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, okay. We congratulated you three times.
Congratulations, old boy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How's daddy-dom?
It's pretty cool. I've been really lucky. My daughter, she is an incredible eater. She's taken to the feeding real well, and she sleeps for like 3 or 4 hours at a time. And she's actually a better sleeper than I am. I usually wake up every 2.5 to 3 hours to go tinkle. Apparently she has a bigger bladder than I do. So what are you going to do? I'm blessed. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, it's just a bit of a culture shock for you, or you're just savoring the newness of the moment and the event, aren't you?
Well, some of it's culture shock for me. It's the way I feel about things. You know, usually when I'm done working, the first thing I'm thinking about is, you know, grabbing a beer with Jamie Campbell and then go home to the little missus. But now it's completely flipped. I just want to get home and see what she's going to do next. She's a little wiggle worm, so she goes and, you know, she makes all these little baby noises and smiles at me, and I don't know, she makes me feel pretty important, so I just want to go home and check that out.
So not that different from Jamie, really?
No, actually,
pretty much the same, yeah.
The only difference between, you know, that situation and the one with Jamie is I can spoon Jamie and not worry about hurting him. the little one, she's God. Really, really tiny. Really tiny, and I'm kind of a thrasher in my sleep, so I can't be within an arm's length ever when I'm asleep.
Campbell was in here last week. He was complaining about that.
Yeah, he's...
You know, about how you thrash in your sleep. And
I'm a rough sleeper, yeah. You know, when we go on road trips together, forget the separate rooms. We just share a queen size.
Yeah, well, you got to do what you got to do. We were yeah, I don't know how much you heard, if at all. We were just yakking about Rasmus a little bit. It's not like the first time we've talked about it. But you want to, you know, as his... It would appear his tenure with the Blue Jays is coming to a close, and for the most part, it's happening parked on the bench. You want to throw your 2 cents in here? What's his future hold, do you think? I mean, I don't think it's with the Blue Jays, but what do you think it holds in general for his career?
Well, I look at Colby as a guy who is, you know, he's good-looking in a uniform. You know, the guys that are, you know, tall with skill sets like his, there's always a coach, there's always a manager, a GM. Somebody thinks that they can be the difference maker in that player's career. There's no question in my mind that Colby Rasmus, he has a skill set that could allow him to be an MVP-type candidate. He has all of the physical attributes. He can run, he can throw, he can go get it in the outfield, he can hit for power. His approach would need to change a bit to hit for average. I think that, you know, he gets caught up looking for the wrong pitch at the wrong time a lot, but, you know, over and done with, yeah, he's a shiny penny. He looks good in the uniform. He's no different than that wild stallion that throws 95 that can't figure it out. There's always a pitching coach out there that thinks that they can fix him. I'm not sure what motivates Colby Rasmus. I'm not a psychologist. I do see a guy who's ultra-talented who's yet to live up to the potential that he has. Who knows if he even wants to, and that's his decision. It doesn't make him a bad person if he doesn't want to be a superstar baseball player. He's doing something that he's talented at, and he's making a good living doing it, and there's nothing wrong with that. I really believe that there is somebody out there, probably a smaller market club, that would take a chance on a Colby Rasmus to see if they can't light a fire under this guy, make him a little bit more of an outwardly passionate type of player, a guy who you would want to catch, or you would want, you know, in center field for 162 games, somebody that's going to do some damage at the plate and make some significant contributions. It's obvious that the Blue Jays don't feel like he's that guy. I think he has that ability, but does he want to be that guy? That's only Colby knows that. He'll land on his feet if he wants to. He may have to take one of those, you know, one-year play-your-way-back-into-good-favor type contracts, the likes of which we've seen several times. You know, I think Nelson Cruz signed a one-year deal, kind of like that. Only Colby's not coming off PED suspension. He's just coming off a bad year where, you know, everybody expected him to pick up and where he left off in 2013 and just hit the ground running in 2014, and it didn't happen like that for him. I really believe that he has a chance to be a great player. It's all about whether or not he wants it or not. And you know, I haven't taken the time to go down and ask him whether or not, you know, he does or he doesn't.
But I, you know, that is the puzzle, Greg. Because, you know, one of the things people say about athletes all the time is when guys are in the year before free agency, he's in a contract drive, right? He's going to go out there and redouble his efforts because he knows there's money on the line here, even if he doesn't care about anything else. Yeah. And here's a guy in his contract year who's had a god-awful year. You know, just has been looked lost all year, and it's going to cost him millions and millions of dollars because of that.
It will. Only he knows whether it matters to him or not. I look at this. You know, you either want it just the right amount, or you don't want it enough, or you want it too much. I mean, we've seen there's only three ways to be. I look at this guy, and I see him, and I see the way, you know, he's been treated, the way people have responded to him. And, you know, you guys know I'm not a big fan of tweaking the lineup a whole lot. You make your bed, you lie in it. You know, you identify 7 to 8 good players. You put them out there as much as you possibly can. You know, if I'm Colby Rasmus, I'm always wondering, you know, am I in the lineup? Am I not in the lineup? Do they think I can hit lefties? Don't they think I can hit lefties? You know, what is the deal? You know, we don't get to go down to the clubhouse and be privy to all these private conversations, if they're happening at all. How's the level of communication? I don't know. But to me, if I was Colby Rasmus, I would always wonder, because you just haven't seen that consistency in the lineup that, you know, over the years we've seen Colby here. Is he in? Is he out? We don't know. Same thing with Adam Lind. Is he in? Is he out? And I always come back to it. You can point yourself to all kinds of different reasons why the Blue Jays are inconsistent. Well, their lineups are inconsistent. And honestly, you know, we talked about it the other day on the program about how, you know, they all swing for the fences. They rely too heavily on the home run, and they're in and out of the lineup. So to me, I think that has an effect on a player's psyche. You know, you could go up there against the nastiest left-hander in the world, but if your manager thinks you have a chance to get a hit against him, or your manager's just flat out not worried about whether or not you take an offer, you sort of develop a comfort level, almost a feeling of kindredship, a loyalty to that management, to that coach, to that organization. But when you're in and out of the lineup, and you know guys are flipping coins whether or not, you know, you're going to play or not, you know, who's hot, who's not, to me that stuff is it's too hard to figure. The odds of you being right enough to impact the season in a positive way are slim and none, in my opinion. You got to go out there with your best horses. And I know from having been a player, guys like Carlos Tosca, who would come to me and say, are you good to go today? Can you play? And this was on the heels of, say, catching 8 or 9 in a row, day game after night game. You get to the feel, you get to the sense where you want to run through a brick wall for guys like that. And trust me, when you're in the heat of the battle and you're going out there every day, you take an offer against a lefty, you're a lefty on lefty, but your rhythm and your timing stay with you. You come back the next game and you go crazy and you have a great game. It's the in and out and the uncertainty that makes ball players go cuckoo, and you know it messes with their minds and it messes with their performance quite a bit.
Let's talk a bit about a couple of young pitchers. Stroman got that suspension thing, but Hutchinson pitched on the weekend. Would you shut these guys down for the year already? Would you do it now? Are you, you know, shouldn't you be concerned that in games at this point that really are fundamentally irrelevant, you got to start looking at innings pitched? The last thing you want to have happen in the last week or 10 days of the season is have young pitcher go down.
You're 100% correct. You know, we're putting me in the position of manager or general manager to make that decision. Yeah, in my opinion, Once the games are meaningless, from a standing standpoint, once you know that you're going to be unable to make the postseason, protect your young assets. You know, you might even shut Jose Bautista down. You might shut Edwin Encarnacion down. You can't shut everybody down all at once,
right.
But you can be judicious with your playing time at this point because, and it's funny, too, because I know having played for John Gibbons, he is a player's manager. He's the kind of guy that's going to walk around the clubhouse and privately ask guys, hey, you got any incentives in your contract? What do you need to get there? I'm not sure if the Jays are a ball club that do incentives anymore, but he's that guy. He will go around and make sure if you've got a chance to hit an incentive mark, he's going to give you every opportunity to do so. I'm sure he'll probably give Mark Burley an opportunity to get that 200 innings if it's possible,
right,
in some creative way or not. But when it comes to those nuggets of gold, those prospects that you have that you want to protect, yeah, you got to look at the situation and say, are we playing for anything of significance, or is the future of this organization better served to just go ahead and shut these guys down right now and avoid a line drive, at the pitcher at a wrong time or an arm injury? I mean, I don't think to me, Drew Hutchison has nothing left to prove to me. He has nothing left to prove to this organization or this town. He has been an absolute rock star, in my opinion. Stayed healthy. He proved me wrong. I'm not going to lie. He proved me wrong. I didn't think he had it in him to be able to go physically all the way this far into the season on the heels of that Tommy John surgery. He's been up and down, but I'm basically pointing my finger to the fact that he's coming back. You know, I won't cut him that break next year, but he's done everything that I could have hoped for and more from a kid of his age, of his experience, and coming back from that surgery. He in my opinion, should be shut down. You want to protect Stroman, you want to protect Aaron Sanchez from the unforeseen. Why wouldn't you? Give Daniel Norris a shot at starting. Maybe, give some of these other players an opportunity to get some time out there and feel like they're a big leaguer, because for some of these kids, this is maybe their only chance and their only trip to the big leagues. So weirder things have happened. Guys come up and they're all full of promise, and then one winter happens and they have a bad spring and they never see the big league diamond again. So I say protect your assets and give them a break.
But you're gonna be your option, though, really. You got Todd Redman is one guy who can spot start. But other than that, Greg, geez, you got other young guys who are going to pitch for young guys. You're talking Norris and Graveman, guys like that. And they're not stretched out anymore to start. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, but even if you give them three or four innings and let
the bullpen
take over.
But you do that every game, though? Like,
you have to. Well, yeah. I mean, you've got three guys that you can start that you're not worried about.
Yeah, it's you still got two slots, and I'm just saying, you want to Dan Norris's pitch to full season too. Do you want to throw him out there? You're risking his arm. I guess Graveman's a different kind of pitcher, but again, a guy who's pitched a full season, there's not like you haven't got like four Todd Redmans hanging around to kill a bunch of innings.
You don't, and that's a valid point. I look at those names that you're throwing out there, Graveman, Norris. If they're maxed out on innings, they're maxed out on innings, and you just have to do what you got to do in order to. Piecemeal this last seven ball games together, but it's only a week. We're only talking about 1 to 2 starts tops.
That's right. As as this thing winds down and you start, invariably looking ahead to next year and the off season, and we've sort of talked about this, but are you focused on one priority? What do you think Alex's number one priority is in getting this team ready for 2015?
I still think they need some... I think they need depth pretty well in every direction, to be honest with you. And the reason I say the word depth is you have to have a ball club that doesn't necessarily have to have everything go right for it in order to be successful. We've seen some streaky baseball this year. Inconsistency with the fundamentals is one of the major reasons. Their reliance on the home run. I don't see any reason why adding another legitimate starting pitcher would hurt. They still need to figure out what they want to do at second base. They need to figure out what they want to do at third, whether it's Brett Laurie at third, whether it's Brett Laurie at second, and somebody else new coming in to play third. In my opinion, Brett's a guy that is a guy that they're hoping that's going to contribute, but we still haven't seen the kind of contribution that we're hoping for out of Laurie. So there's a number of different places to go, but one idea that sticks in my mind about this ball club, and I think they already have the right guy in place in Kevin Seitzer. I know what his hitting philosophy is. It's gap to gap. It's good at bats. It's get quality pitches. The problem is, I don't think that you have an organization or a team that's completely bought into it yet. I say that because I don't want to change anything about the way Jose Bautista or Edwin Encarnacion or Adam Lind or my big power guys. I don't want to change anything about the way they approach their at-bats. Those guys are in the middle of the lineup for a reason. Everybody else on this team is a table setter. They're not power hitters. Plain and simple. You're not power hitters. You need to do a better, more consistent job of setting the table, grinding out at-bats. There's just no reason why this club can't be more consistent offensively. I think one of the question marks that everybody had about this team was going to be the starting pitching. Those guys have done a pretty nice job. The ups and downs of this ball club, the ebb and flow, or I should say, it's been the offense. It's been the inability to manufacture runs. I already know that the hitting coach isn't the problem. Maybe finding some guys who are willing to buy in. Maybe a change, a subtle change, a couple of different faces here and there, some guys that are willing to buy into this philosophy and set an example, because right now they just don't have the depth. They don't have the ability to play at a 75% clip and remain competitive in this division. But they have to get better and deeper.
Even with that, though, Greg, you're only talking about three or four guys, right? Because I would throw Cabrera into that list of guys I would mess with. That guy had a great season. And I might even put Jose Reyes in that. You know, offensively, I think had a pretty good season. So now you're talking about whoever's playing center field for you, Laurie, whoever's playing second base for you. And actually, you know, Johnner Navarro had a pretty good season at the plate, too. So you're talking about kind of those, you know, who are you talking about? The Gozes, the Lauries, the Pilars, the... Yes. But that's a third of your lineup, right?
But here's the thing, Steven. You look at the guys outside of Bautista, Encarnacion, you know, Lind. Melky swung the bat well, and you know you're not going to complain about Melky's production at all. Jose Reyes, I'll take that performance, or I can leave it. He doesn't steal bases anymore, so he's really honestly not the player that I thought he was coming in here. There's some changes that need to be made. I don't know whether you bring in different guys or just, you know, reaffirm what it is that you're trying to do. There's certainly a lot of talent in this clubhouse, on this field when the Jays are doing it. But you can't look at these numbers and say that they've done a great job, because they're not going to go to the postseason. So it obviously wasn't good enough. It was good. It was a step forward in my mind. But, you know, everything's fine and dandy when you're hitting 2 and 3 home runs a game. But when they're not hitting 2 and 3 home runs a game, they're not a very good ball club. They're not a very a challenging team to pitch to. You can't go up and down like they did all year long and play this streaky kind of baseball and expect to be in the conversation at the end. You see what's happened on this recent road trip. They were kind of feeling like they were going to go ahead and peak a little bit and start going on a run, and then boom, right back down. That can't happen. They needed to show up on this road trip and win some ball games, and they won, I think, one ball game. So, and this was the time to do it. This was the time to go out and get on your streak. To play your good baseball, to have your offensive shine time, and it didn't show up. You know, guys, if you don't win games, it doesn't matter. I mean, Melky Cabrera had a fantastic year, and he's certainly going to cash in. Jose Reyes, he had a pretty good year. Bautista's year is phenomenal. 100 runs scored, 100 driven in. Holy smokes, what an offensive production for him. But at the end of the day, where are the Blue Jays going to be when the season ends on the 29th?
Also rounds?
Yeah.
That's so where they are.
Obviously, none of it was good enough.
Yep. We got to get out of here. You got things to do, too. Go get some popcorn and maybe some formula. You can take some formula home. Would be nice.
Yeah, buddy.
Thank you, Zani. See you soon. Greg Zahn at the Rogers Center.
It is a tricky discussion, though, Bob, because you say you're right. They're out of it. And everybody's saying, boy, they could have been in it. And then you say, boy, the center of the lineup, everybody likes the center of the lineup, right? You like the 3, 4, 5 guys. You like the 2, 3, 4, 5 guys. Starting pitching, I think they used 8 starting pitchers this year, and by and large, starting pitching has been pretty good, right? Consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Bullpen, not as consistent as last year, but Jansen, once he kind of got healthy again, was kind of like Jansen at the end of the season. But, you know, I'd say the bullpen has been an issue. Defense is an issue. You know, the bottom of the lineups have been an issue, and that's where you get into the kind of creating runs part of it. Like, I want
– Situational hitting has been a big issue for
this
team. I
guess, but I want –
way too many times with, you know, they get a runner in scoring position with none out, one out, and – just not able to get that run in. And I know that happens with every team.
Yeah.
But it is frustrating. I mean.
But you want Encarnacion trying to hit home runs. You want Bautista trying to hit home runs.
Well, see, I don't. I mean.
Really?
Yeah.
And you don't want, you got two of the best power hitters in the league.
Okay. Maybe up until 2 strikes. Go ahead. What I like about Bautista's year and what I think has been really, and I mentioned this in the last hour, what really has impressed me about Jose's year this year is his willingness and ability to go to the opposite field with 2 strikes on him. And he's done it, or at least tried to do it, consistently and achieved success at it on a regular basis. Edwin, not so much, but that's okay. But it's other guys who have failed consistently to do little things.
But you got to talk about which guys, though? Because again, we're talking about, you're not going to talk about Melky because he's had a very consistent year until he got hurt. Reyes is an interesting debate, not the player he used to be, but has had a pretty effective offensive year. Lynn, when he's hitting against righties, had a higher average hitting against right-handed pitching than anybody in the American League. So we're talking about, you know, 3 guys, right? So whichever 3 guys you want to pick, you know, Rasmus, Laurie, Pilar/Goes, whoever was playing second base. You know, that's why it gets tricky because, you know, that hunk of the order actually did most of the things you want them to do. That's 6 guys.
Well, you know, I mean, I thought a fair bit about this. I mean, and I haven't seen the stats. I'd love to see what the stats are with runners in scoring position and less than 2 out by comparison to the league average. Like, I mean, if you just showed me the number, you know, what percentage of runners were brought in, I don't know that I'd necessarily understand the validity of that singular number, but as a point of comparison against other teams, is that one of the places where the Blue Jays have been inferior to those teams that are ahead of them? And anecdotally, I think there's probably some truth in that. We got to take the break because we got more to do. Darren Heitner of Forbes magazine will join us in a minute. U.S. Congress thinking about taking away the NFL's not-for-profit business status. And even if that does happen, our friend Brunt doesn't think it's going to. What exactly would that mean? How would that exactly change things? We'll address it when Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Before the hour, McCown and Brunt in our Toronto studios. While some people are focused on football games in the National Football League, others are focused on the off-field drama involving the commissioner and Ray Rice and all the other things that are going on. At this moment in time, there are those who are suggesting that the National Football League should start paying taxes, that its not-for-profit business status is not appropriate. It's a status they've had in the National Football League since 1944. Although I confess, I don't know about you, Brent, but I confess I don't really understand how they got it in the first place.
No, it's good. It's a very good question.
Darren Heitner is with Forbes magazine and joins us to talk about this. I don't know if you know the answer either, Darren, but how did they get this status in the first place?
Good afternoon. Well, I wasn't around in 1940, but I've actually read about the reasoning why. And back then, the NFL was a trade association, and it was just getting started. And Congress saw this exemption as a way for the association to basically save some money and try to put people in the stands. And, you know, at that point in time, we're talking about a fledgling league, not a league today that's making upwards of $9, $10 billion a year. So times have changed. Now you have congressmen and women saying that because times have changed and because there are so many issues, Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, the Washington Redskins name issue, you know, the NFL doesn't deserve this exemption anymore, that it should be taken away from them. So that's where we are today. That's where we were back in 1940, and I think that was the justification back then, which may not be so relevant today.
What are the what other trade associations would have this kind of status then? It would be in the same category as the NFL.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. The NBA is a for-profit organization. The NBA pays taxes, as does Major League Baseball, which lost its exemption roughly a decade ago. But the National Hockey League, the PGA, actually gets a bigger exemption than the NFL. They retain that tax-exempt status. Now, obviously, neither the PGA nor the NHL are making the type of revenues as the NFL, so maybe they have a better cause for keeping their exemption. But just so you know, there are still, you know, those organizations out there in professional sports that are benefiting from this type of status.
What would the actual impact be, in your estimation, to the National Football League if it lost this status?
You know, interestingly, what I've read is that it would be somewhat marginal, that, you know, because of different type of tax laws and different ways that the NFL could, you know, mess around with its own books to show some losses as opposed to gains, that the tax implications may not be as large as some think, and that, you know, this, much like many things, this could be a big PR play by congressmen and women who are trying to lead the public to believe that they're really hurting the NFL for the stance that it's taken on these domestic right. violence issues, you know, on the whole Washington Redskins debate, when, meanwhile, losing the tax-exempt status wouldn't hurt the NFL at all.
Well, how did baseball end up losing their tax-exempt status? What was the there wasn't a political flashpoint there, was there?
No, I don't think it had anything to do with a particular political issue. I'm not well versed on that particular matter, but I do believe that it was roughly a decade ago, and it may have just been a change in the tax code as it related to Major League Baseball. But truthfully, I'm not sure about that.
We're a little tight on time. I guess what's worth pointing out, though, is that for everybody who thinks the NFL teams don't pay taxes, it's not really true. The 32-member organizations, the individually owned franchises, do pay tax. It is the league itself that has this tax-exempt status. And, of course, they're able to move numbers from the left column to the right column in order to benefit to the maximum of their ability. What remains to be seen is if Congress is successful in changing the status, and B, what exactly does it mean? And Darren, at least, doesn't think it's probably going to mean a whole lot. Darren, good of you to take time for us today. Thank you very much.
Take care, guys.
That's Darren Heitner of Forbes magazine. You can read more about this story in the pages of Forbes.
Pretty classic situation. A bunch of politicians will be able to appear concerned about a social issue kind of selectively and grandstand about it, but
we hardly ever see that, do we?
It never happens, right?
Yeah, hardly ever.
Remember those hearings about PEDs and baseball and all of that stuff?
Well, drug testing alone, you know, the you know, you guys have got to, now mind you, they did essentially force or shame professional sports leagues into conducting drug tests.
Sorta, just baseball, and sorta. No one else really felt that shame. NFL is still not testing for HGH, so.
Well, no, hockey is testing, but they never don't catch anybody because.
Because hockey players don't use drugs, Bob.
Hockey players don't use drugs. They don't need them. Doesn't help you play any better. Right. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, Will Carroll of the Bleacher Report, still ahead on Primetime.